Okay. We're going to talk about Bedikas Chometz tonight and everything related to the mitzvah of Bedikas Chometz. Pesach, according to the Torah, would be much easier than it is than Pesach according to the rabbis. Pesach according to the rabbis is very, very complicated. According to the Torah, be very easy, but the rabbis are saving us from transgressing very great Torah prohibitions for which the penalty is kores, that means spiritual excision, the soul gets cut off. According to the Torah, it is absolutely sufficient in order to destroy the chometz from our possession just to use bittul. Bittul means I decide in my heart that my chometz is like the dust of the earth, that's all I have to do, and it would be sufficient. However, Chazal were concerned that since bittul is dependent on what a person thinks and feels in their heart, so that a person might not fully nullify their chametz, they therefore established that in addition to the bittul, we need to do bedika and biur. Bedika means a checking for the chometz, a physical checking for the chometz, and biur means a physical destruction, a destroying, a burning of this chometz in addition to the bittul. In addition, if we didn't do the biur, we might come to eat the chometz on Pesach. So imagine, for instance, that I did bittul. I stood before Pesach and I said, all of my chometz is like the dust of the earth, and my chometz is still lying around my house. So I was mevatel it, it's not in my possession, it's hefker, it's ownerless, it's not related to me at all, but in the middle of Pesach, even if I pick up something ownerless and hefker and I put it in my mouth, it's still called an achila, it's still called an eating. So because of that, Chazal said, you have to do a bedika, a checking, and a biur, and a destruction of the chametz. Now once Chazal said that you have to do bedika, and you have to do biur, we still have to do the bittul. In other words, it's not enough just to do the checking and the destroying of the chametz. In addition to that, you still have to, in your mind and in your heart, and with words, nullify your chometz. Why? Because maybe I didn't do a bedika that was good enough. And if I didn't do a bedika that was good enough, so imagine that all I did was my checking, my destroying, but I missed some places. So in the middle of Pesach, I might find a beautiful gluska, it's called, a beautiful roll, and I'm going to look at it. But you know what? If I wasn't mevatel it, if I didn't nullify it, it's still mine. And so for the moment that I look at it and I say, wow, what a beautiful roll, at that moment I have transgressed bal yera'e bal yematze, that chometz should not be found in my possession. And therefore, Chazal said, we need both. We need the bittul, we need the nullification of the chometz, and in addition, we need the bedika, the search, and the biur, the destroying of the chometz. Okay. What is the time of the bedika? The time of the destruction, or the search, pardon me, of the chometz. So that is done on the 14th of Nisan after nightfall, after Tzeis HaKochavim, when the stars come out. Now, that's in a normal year. But this year, the 14th of Nisan, is Shabbos. Because we go from Shabbos right into Pesach. So we can't be doing any search and destroy on Shabbos, at least not in the classic sense. Right? My kids do search and destroy all the time. But what we're going to do this year, in terms of the Bedika, so the Bedika's Chometz is going to be Thursday night before. So Thursday night before is going to be Bedikas Chometz, right after nightfall. There is a custom brought down in the Shulchan Aruch to place 10 pieces of bread, and I'm going to say this and explain what I mean, to do a superficial search. And I say a superficial search because the main cleaning has already been done. The main cleaning has already been done. There are those who will spend 8 hours searching on the night of Bedikas Chametz. You don't have to. And I'm going to explain how you don't have to. Okay. All places where Chametz might have been must be checked by the light of a candle. We're going to talk about all the different possibilities and specifics, but all places where chametz might have been must be checked by the light of a candle. Now, you may check before the 14th of Nisan, or this year, Thursday night, with a candle. And if you check before the night of Bedikas Chametz, which is Thursday night this year, now the Bedika has to be with a candle. And many of us use a flashlight, and a flashlight, according to most poskim, is okay. According to others, it's even better than a candle. So if you want to use a flashlight, go ahead. But if you check before the night of the 14th, it's called a good bedika, as long as you did it in the way that you have to check on the night of the 14th. That means with a flashlight or a candle.
And by night?
And by night. Well,
Same thing, just night before tonight.
Not by night. You can do it by day, too.
Okay, so by day. By day.
Yeah, I don't. You do it by night on the 13th, but you can do it any time. You can do it any time before that.
Even Thursday by day, if you're doing it with a candle or a flashlight.
Right. Now you still, let me just explain this. You still have to do a bedika on the night of the 13th this year, which is Thursday. You still have to do a bedika. But you can do all the heavy work beforehand. So you can go into all your cabinets, and you can go into all your drawers and your cupboards and every place where you think chametz might have been, where you might have walked into. You can clean it out. Cleaning it out is not a bedika. That's cleaning. And then you can do the bedika. Then you can do the bedika with the flashlight or the candle. And once you've done that, it's considered checked. So then all you need to do at that point, in order not to have to check it on the night of the 13th, is seal it off. If you seal it off at that point, that means nothing went in, so that doesn't need to be checked anymore on the night of the 13th. And that's why I'm saying that you can do a superficial checking on the night of the 13th, this year the 13th, normally the 14th, because you've done all the checking beforehand, and you've done it with a candle or a flashlight, and you've taken care of that obligation. If you don't do that beforehand, let's say all you've done is clean, and you've done a really good job of cleaning. That means on the night of the 13th this year, you've got to open up every cupboard and every drawer and every pantry, everything. Right? You can't get away without doing a bedika everywhere. But if you've done the bedika beforehand, if you've gone into all of these places with a flashlight, you really have up from 30 days before, then it's considered checked. As long as you seal it off after you've done that. Okay? Hence, we have the possibility of a superficial checking. Now, it's not really a superficial checking. All you're doing is you're spreading it out over many days beforehand. Correct?
Yeah.
So it's not really a superficial checking. When the time for checking arrives, you may not eat a meal. You can taste food, that's okay. But eating, sitting down to a meal, you can't do that. Can't sit down to a meal once the time for the bedika arrives. The bedika comes before anything else. Any place where there is a suspicion that chametz may have come in, that has to be checked. Any room that one would go into during a meal, in other words, let's say you might not bring chametz into that room, but you would go into that room during a meal. An example would be the place where you keep your paper goods. Well, you don't keep any chametz in there, let's say. And you wouldn't go in there looking for chametz, but that would be a place that you would go in the middle of a meal. Because if you ran out of paper goods, you're going to walk in there to get more paper goods. Therefore, there is a concern that you walked in with something in your hand that you were eating that needs to be checked. You need to check only those places that we mentioned before where it is the derech, the way to leave chametz. So for instance, very, very low places or very high, hard to reach, where your hand can't quite reach that place, that doesn't need to be checked. Because there's no reason to suspect that chametz would be up there or down there. The exception would be that if you have children, then you need to check low places. No exception. Okay? Places where you eat the whole year, your dining room, your kitchen, you need to check under the tables and under the chairs. Guaranteed you're going to find chametz there. If children are present, then you need to check under the beds. You're going to find chametz there. Give you an example of where you would never think that there would be chametz. A family I was friendly with. Much better. A family I was friendly with. In the middle of Pesach, this was on the night of the Seder. So they didn't have central air conditioning, but they had a very big unit in the wall, and it was on a timer. And it got really warm, and the air conditioner came on. And what do you think came flying out of the air conditioner?
Oh, Cheerios.
Cheerios came flying out of the air conditioner. It was unbelievable.
It's beautiful.
Nobody smiled, I hope.
Yeah.
It was like dust.
And I just want to tell you another thing. We were going through some of the kids' past projects and artwork in school. And this was just last week. Not because of chametz, not because of cleaning for Pesach, just because of the abundance of projects, we just need to thin them out a little bit. So Shoshana pulls up a piece and she says, "Ah, look, I'm so proud of this." It's how she's learned how to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 10. And all the numbers were made with macaroni. I mean, had we not looked, that's real chametz. So you can't be too careful. You need to check cuffs and pockets, both for children and adults. Even if you say, "I'm positive I never put anything in there," this falls under the category that Chazal, our sages, talk about. Milsa de lo ramya ale de inish lava daite, that's something that a person doesn't think about normally, is not on his mind. He can't be sure about what he did. And therefore, you have to assume that there is chametz in your pockets and in your cuffs, and they need to be checked. Now, anything in cracks or crevices in floors, where you would have to literally pick it out, it's not necessary to check. Even if there is definitely chametz in there, it's not necessary to check. Now, if one's hand can just reach in and pull it out, so then yes, you have to. But if it means you have to pick it out of a crack or a crevice, then you don't have to check. Now, I'm going to say everything here that I'm telling you right now is according to the Ikar Hadin, according to the essential halacha. And at the end of this, we'll see what our custom is, what our practice is. So, everything in cracks and crevices, you don't have to check. If you would have to pick it out. Chometz in a place that one doesn't go, example that's given is a pit, where you don't regularly go into this pit. Maybe you go once every few months, you might go into this pit. So then you don't have to check for chometz in that pit, because the assumption is you're not going to be going into that pit during Pesach. So a present day example of that pit would be the space under your refrigerator. So you don't have to check under your refrigerator.
Nice.
Because people don't... Huh?
It's nice to clean once a year.
Yes, spring cleaning. But that's not what this class is about, right? So as far as checking for chametz, you don't have to move your refrigerator. People don't go looking under their refrigerator normally during the year. You might go once a year or something. So therefore, you can leave it the way it is.
Storm cellar. What a storm cellar.
It all depends on your family.
Let's say you had a storm cellar that's full of dry goods. It's full of, like, you have this elaborately prepared storm cellar. You don't go down there, but to check it maybe once or twice a year to make sure.
What if it's dry goods? What do you call dry goods?
Well, like cereals and whatnot.
So then you have chametz in there.
So you sell it.
So you know you have chametz in there.
And so it has to be checked for sure. That's for
what
sure.
What if you knew this pit? What if this pit had, you knew for some reason had chametz? Then you have to remove the chametz because you know there's chametz in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Rabbi, what if you're used to using, if you're used to moving the refrigerator every year, and if every year you find something there?
It's not every year. I'm not talking every. Even if you go, that's like the pit. You go every year to the pit. You go even maybe two times a year to the pit. But the assumption is that you're not going to be going during Pesach. That's the point. The issue isn't whether you go every year. We know you go every year. But you're not going to be going during Pesach.
But is that considered that you already established a tradition to do that if you've already done that every year?
What? No, it's not. It's not. You don't have. I'm just saying, I'm talking about the essential halakha. You don't have to do it. Okay. Now, in all of the above cases, let's say you have chametz in the cracks and the crevices of your floor or in walls or baseboards or things like that. So even though you don't have to pick it out, if you could put some sort of liquid, like a bleach compound or something on it that makes it so that a dog wouldn't eat it anymore, that's preferable, not necessary, but preferable, if you can do that.
Fantastic
does not make chametz nifsal miachilas kelev. It does not. Chametz fantastic does not.
That's to be a bleach.
Yeah, bleach or something that's really
strong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, it has to be by candlelight, we said. It cannot be by the light of the moon. You cannot use a torch. The definition of a torch is two or more wicks put together. So if you have a candle with two wicks in it, no good. If you searched with a torch, your search is no good. You got to go back and search again.
What if your flashlight had two bulbs?
No, that's not a problem. The reason why a torch is a problem is because the flame is so big, so we are concerned you're not going to put it into tight spots,
right,
and you're not going to check very well. A flashlight is not a problem at all, because we're not afraid. That's why people say a flashlight is even better. If you held two candles together, it's no good. Okay, now the bracha for the bedika. Before the bedika, one says, "Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvoisav v'tzivanu al biur chametz," on the destruction of the chametz. The bedika is for the sake of the biur. The checking is for the sake of the destroying. So therefore, the blessing is with the end result in mind. Once you've said the bracha, you may not speak from the moment you said the bracha until you began the bedika, because that is a mitzvah. You may not speak. If you spoke about something for the sake of the bedika, you said the bracha, and then, let's say you're going to have some of your children do some of the checking for you, and it has to be children who are, first of all, they have to be gedolim, they have to be adults. They have to be over 13 or 12. They can't be younger. You can't trust them. And then even if they're over 13 or 12, you have to know for yourself if you can trust them. But let's say you didn't assign rooms to the various people who are doing the checking. And then so once you said the bracha, you realize that you need to assign the different rooms right now. So you talked before you began your bedika. But that's a talking for the need of the bedika. So bidyevit, after the fact, you don't have to go back and say a new bracha. But if you spoke about, oh, did you hear what happened in the basketball game? Boom. You just nullified your bracha, and you have to go back and say a new bracha if you haven't begun your checking yet. Okay.
But once you began...
Well, if you began your checking, then preferably you're only supposed to speak about those things related to the checking. If you spoke about something not related to the checking, you don't have to go back and say a new bracha. You should just not talk. That's all. That's preferable. One uses one bracha. If you have many houses or a house and a business, you use one bracha and it covers everything. Okay? You don't make separate brachas in separate places. You may appoint a shaliach, an agent. But if you do appoint an agent to do the checking for you, it is still best for you to help him, because the mitzvah is always considered to be best when you do it versus your agent.
Let's say, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say that if you want to have somebody, you want to appoint somebody to do the checking for you, that's okay. But always try to do a little bit of the checking yourself.
If one had a holding in another city, would that person say a bracha?
Okay, so if you appoint a shaliach to do the whole checking for you, so the shaliach has to be standing by the Baal Habayis when he makes the bracha and answers Amen. And you should not send one who did not hear the bracha. Now, this is talking about where the Baal Habayis is making the bracha. So if you're making the bracha, your shaliach has to hear your bracha. If the Baal Habayis does not check at all, which would be the situation, let's say, in that other city, you didn't check at all, and you only send the shaliach, then the shaliach will make the bracha. There is a minhag, as we said, to put out 10 pieces of chometz. The reason is that some say that if one doesn't find any chometz on the night of Bedikas chometz, especially in our times, where, as I described before, that we only do a superficial checking, because we've done the major checking, not the cleaning, but we've done the checking. And this, I'm really strongly advising you to do this, that you do the cleaning and the checking beforehand, so that if you check beforehand, again, with a candle or with a flashlight, and then, as you need to do on the night of Bedikas Chometz, you do it in advance of Bedikas Chometz, and then you seal off those places. All of those places are considered to be checked. And they don't need to be checked on the night of Bedikas Chometz at all. So then, you basically checked your whole house come the night of Bedikas Chometz, so you're not going to find anything. So according to some Mefarshim, if you're not going to find anything, so like it's as if the Bedika is for nothing. So that's why there is a minhag to put out 10 pieces of chometz because of that. Others say that the 10 pieces of chometz are corresponding to the 10 lost tribes, and therefore we're searching for them to try to bring them back. But most Mefarshim say that even if you don't find anything, and you didn't put out any pieces of chometz, it's still 100% fine. 100% fine. Questions?
You said that you have to seal. Cabinets and so forth you can seal, but the kids' rooms and the various rooms you can't.
Good, then they would need to be checked again on the night.
Basically, you do have to check your whole house superficially.
No, well, it depends. Let's say you don't have children in the house. Right?
Okay.
So remember how we said before, you only have to check those places that you might have brought chametz. If you don't have children in your house, and you checked all the bedrooms, and you know you've checked it, and then you know from then until now you didn't bring chametz back to the bedroom, and then even in the places where you normally have chametz, you've checked the cabinets, you've sealed them off so that no chametz can. You don't have to check back there anymore.
So you can check rooms that if nobody's going to bring chametz there, you can check whole rooms and not.
Right, because if it's dependent on you,
okay.
Because so you know, being could have gone into that room at all.
Right, but if you have children, then you're right, you can't.
Yeah,
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so when you're checking, you're looking, you know, at some of those areas, maybe areas you're selling actual chametz, but it's in a container. Let's say...
Yeah, we're not talking about the stuff you're selling.
So you're right. You're talking about everything that's straight.
You don't have to check the room or the cabinet that you're using to sell your chametz.
Okay, let's say you have, okay.
Exclude that whole area, because you're going to lease that whole area to the person who you're selling it to.
Oh, the area is leased even if it's, oh, I thought let's say that area, let's say you had a...
The area is leased.
You don't have to take that out and clean in case there is a stray... Let's say you have a pantry. You don't have to take everything out in case there's a random crumb. Okay, there's the things in bottle, let's say in a container. Then there's a random crumb under, you know, in that same area with the containers. Are you looking for that kind of chametz?
No, that whole...
That's considered sold. You're selling the whole area.
The whole area.
Oh, okay, so you don't have to clean that out. Oh.
Okay, that whole area where you're putting your chametz, you're not going to go in there. You're not going to go in that area. Where you're putting your chametz, you're not going in there, the whole Pesach.
But you're leasing though, right?
Not selling. Yeah, you're leasing the area, that's right.
This would be more like checking an area where there was chametz, but it's pots and pans, and you're not actually having any.
Areas that you're going to be using on Pesach. Areas that you're going to be using on Pesach, which is the rest of the house besides the area that you're selling.
You're not checking the area that you're not using it. Well, you're sealing some stuff. Checking areas that you're not using on Pesach, because that's why you're checking and sealing it.
Yeah.
You're sealing it
because you're not going to use those vessels on Pesach,
right.
But it's still yours. It belongs to you.
Right, okay.
Okay? Now, so you want to take out those pots and pans, you want to check the pots and pans, you want to check all of those areas, you want to make sure there's no chametz in there. Remember how we said you don't have to, things that absorb chametz, there's no reason, there's no problem keeping those around, you don't have to get rid of those, you just can't use them.
Or to the contrary, you shouldn't sell the kelim.
Oh, you can't.
Yeah, well, we don't. In the document from which we use to sell, we don't sell
chametz. That's what you're saying.
As long as you don't make your own deal with somebody, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Right, but we don't. Right.
What?
Okay.
Okay.
Now, the 10 pieces that you put out should all be less than a kezias, and it should be hard so as not to make any crumbs. Preferably, wrap them up in a bag or something, so that it doesn't present a problem of chametz around the house. Now, if you placed out 10, and you only found 9. Then we say you need to recheck your whole house. You need to recheck your whole house. If you place 10 and you found 11, so then we can be lenient. And then we say, as long as you do a bittul, which we assume that you do a bittul, a nullification of the chametz, so then we say that you just miscounted and you really placed 11. Okay? So if you put out 10 and you found less, you got to find that other piece. You got to check the whole house. If you put out, you think 10, and you found 11, so we say you just miscounted. All right, good.
So you can't write down where you put it, so you...
You can do whatever you want. You absolutely can.
GPS.
Okay? Next. The law of Bedikas Chometz. What kind of pieces do you have to look for? There's a machlokas, a disagreement. If there is an obligation of Bedika, of checking... for less than a kezias. Now keep in mind that the rabbis created the obligation of bedika. Bedika, checking, is different than the obligation of owning chametz. According to the Torah, you're not allowed to own even the slightest little bit of chametz. So we're not talking about ownership, we're not talking about eating, we're not talking about having benefit. We're talking about the obligation of bedika, of checking over here, which is a rabbinic creation. Okay, the rabbis did this to protect us so that we shouldn't have chametz in our possession on Pesach. So the question is there an obligation to check for less than a kezias? Some say there is no obligation to destroy chametz less than a kezias. There's no obligation to destroy chametz less than a kezias. And bittul, okay, bittul, nullification is sufficient. You don't have to destroy less than a kezias. Why? Very obvious. Because the whole idea was you have to search for the chametz, because if you did a bittul, so you might, remember how we said you might see chametz around the house and you might come to eat it. Well, if it's always less than a kezias, even though it's forbidden according to the Torah, but you're never going to get kores, you'll never come to spiritual excision if you eat less than a kezias. So therefore, the rabbis were concerned, according to this opinion, only for those pieces that were a kezias or more. So according to this opinion, you don't have an obligation to do a checking for and destroying of less than a kazayas. Others argue, and they say, that it's not sufficient on less than a kazayas just to nullify it. You need to do a bedika even for the tiniest crumbs. That's a second opinion. There is a middle opinion, and they say the following. They say that on less than a kazayas, there is an obligation to do a check. On pieces less than a kazayas, there is an obligation to do a check. On crumbs, it is sufficient to just mevatel them, to nullify them. Everybody agrees, however, that if you have small pieces which are less than a kazayas, and they are dirty, they're on the floor, so they in no way, shape, or form present a temptation, that's the right word, right? During Pesach, you're not going to pick up these dirty pieces that are less than a kazayas, they're on the floor. Everybody agrees that it's sufficient just to be mevatel them, just to nullify them, and you don't have to do bedika for them.
Well, what kid hasn't picked up a Cheerio from the floor?
I was just going to say, so who are we talking about here? We're talking about
Shana? We're talking about adults. Yeah. We're not talking about...
The kids, though. The kids are fine.
Oh, yeah, but there's no chiyuv on the kids, right? There's no kares on the child. So that's all mi ikar hadin. This is all the essential halacha that I've been describing for you. However, commentaries say that Yisroel Kedoshim, that the Jewish people are very holy, and even though this is the essential halacha, and it's always important to know the essential halacha, nevertheless, the custom is that we search for and destroy every tiny little mashuhu, every tiny little crumb of chametz that we can see. So that is the custom, but you have to know yourself. You have to know what you're capable of. You have to know what you have time for. It does not pay to stress yourself at the expense of trying to be kedoshim, holy, because this is certainly an extra thing. What we say is, if we can achieve this, it's a good thing. If you can't, so then you need to know the essential halacha. The essential halacha is that we will try to do a search for all pieces, even if they're less than a kazayas, but bigger than a crumb. We're going to look for those pieces. Crumbs, we don't have to be concerned about. We can be mevatel them. Anything that's less than a kazayas, it's on the floor and it's dirty, you don't have to be concerned about. Anything that's in cracks and crevices, and you would have to pick it out, you can't just easily get it with your hand, you don't have to be concerned about. So that's on one end of the scale. On the other end, Yisrael Kedoshim, if you can get every single little piece, then it's a worthy and a worthwhile thing to do, and somehow you have to figure out where you are in between those two extremes. Okay?
So Rabbi, when do we burn the hametz?
I'm getting there. So the bittul. So you need to be mevatel, nullify the chametz immediately after the bedika, immediately after the search, which is going to be on Thursday night, and take a look at the Haggadah, read the text in the Haggadah. A question on, you don't understand something I just said?
If you do the mevatel, then how do you have chametz for Shabbos?
You understand what I just said?
Yeah.
You just want to jump ahead three pages.
Well, no.
Okay.
So
I'm not going to let you jump ahead three pages. Okay. But we're getting there. We are getting there. So you need to be mevatel the chametz on Thursday night immediately after the bedika. You'll take a look at the Haggadah. There's no bracha on the bittul. It's just a statement where you nullify. It's something which is dependent on your heart. You just make the statement. And it makes the chometz as if it's like the dust of the ground, but since it's dependent on your heart, that's why there's no bracha on it. Because dvarim shebelev, words that are dependent, that come from the heart, so we can't be sure that a person always has the complete feeling in his heart for the nullification. And that's why there's no bracha. Just one second, Shelley, let me just go through. whatever language you want to say it in, it helps. You have to, if you say it in any other language other than in Lashon HaKodesh, than in Hebrew, so then you have to understand what you're saying. You have to understand. If you say it in Hebrew, it's enough just to understand the concept. But if you say it in any other language, you have to understand the words that you're saying. So if you understand English the best, read it in English. It's a good thing to do, to understand every word. Now, at night, we are only going to be mevatel what is not known to us. That means nullify.
Mevatel means nullify. What does bittel mean?
Mevatel, bittel.
Well, they're the same.
All the same root, yeah. Oh. It's just different forms.
Okay.
So it means to nullify. So at night, we're only going to nullify the chametz that is not known to us. Why? Because there's a lot of chametz that is still known to me that I'm saving over for my Shabbos meal. I'm not going to nullify that chametz. It's only the chametz that I don't know about. I've tried my best to do a checking. There might be some chametz around that I haven't found. That I don't know about is what I'm going to nullify. And you'll read the text in the Haggadah, you'll see it's only talking about that which is not known. It is important to return and to be mevatel my chametz a second time. And normally that's going to be the morning after bedikas chametz, when you will burn your chametz. That's the time when normally you would be mevatel your chametz. You're going to say, that which I know and that which I don't know and everything that's in my possession, I'm going to nullify it and make it like the dust of the earth. However, this year, we will not perform the nullification in the morning when we burn our chametz. We won't. And even if you did say the nullification then, that would be on Friday morning, you still are going to have to perform another bittul, another nullification, Shabbos morning.
Sure.
Shabbos morning, after we have finished eating our bread for the Suda, before the time when chametz becomes forbidden to have any benefit, that's when you have to perform another nullification. And that's going to be Shabbos morning before 12:07. Before 12:07 on Shabbos morning is when you have to perform the second nullification. So you'll take a look in your Haggadah, the text is there. Even if you did a nullification on Friday morning, that's the normal way to do it. You still have to do it again on Shabbos morning because you've kept a lot of stuff behind that you're going to use for the Suda.
Will we not be having a Kiddush here?
There will not be a Kiddush.
No.
And not only will there not be a Kiddush, there's not going to be a traditional Shabbos davening. You're going to see, I'm going to get to that.
Suda Shlishit is going to follow
the Suda. I'm going to get to that.
Oh,
we're not in order yet. We're not there.
We're not there.
Well, okay.
According to the concept, every adult in the house has to do the bitul, or just one person in the house?
One person. The Baal Habayis. Whoever the Baal or Baalas Habayis is, that's who does the bitul. Now, if other people in the house own chametz, in other words, their own chametz, you can't be mevatel what belongs to somebody else. So, let's say your girls, if they have their own chametz, they have to do their own bittul.
What do you mean they have their own chametz?
They own their own things.
They went to the store and got candy
bars.
You can't be mevatel what belongs to them.
So they have to save to themselves.
Yeah.
If it's a husband and wife, I mean... Is
yeah, she's fine with him being mevatel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If one leaves the house, and I don't know if this is relevant to anybody at the table, but if you know somebody that it's relevant to, you'll be able to share the information. If you leave the house before the 14th of Nisan, within 30 days, then you're obligated to perform a bedika. If you leave within 30 days of Pesach, you are obligated to perform a bedika the night before you leave with a candle, without a bracha, even if it is not your intention to return before Pesach. Okay? Even if it's not your intention to return, you still have to perform a bedika.
Well, isn't that only if it's not your intention? Because if you're going to return, you do it.
Wow, so they have to...
No, the answer is no. You'll see. The answer is no, you'll see.
So people like that have to kasher their home?
No, you don't have to kosher it because you're not going to use it. You have to do bedika. Uh-huh. Bedika and koshering are two different things.
No, no. Bedika means that they're
checking for chometz.
Checking for chometz in different places, so they have to clean.
Yes. They have to do bedika. You'll see. But I'm going to have a little thing at the end, a surprise. Okay? So, according to the essential halacha over here, if you go away from your house and it's not your intention to return, within 30 days you have to do bedika with a candle, with a flashlight, without a bracha, and then you'll perform the bittul. It's possible to appoint a shaliach if you're going away to perform the bedika before Pesach. So if you're not going to be there, you can appoint a shaliach to do the bedika in your place. If you leave before 30 days, let's say 31 days or more before Pesach, and your intention is not to return until after Pesach, then you don't have to do a bedika. Okay? So you left 31 or more days before, then, and your intention is not to return, then you don't have to do bedika. If it is your intention to return during Pesach, so then, if you left 31, again, if you left within 30 days, 30 or less, then you have to do bedika even if it's your intention not to return. All the more so if it was your intention to return during Pesach. If you left 31 or more days and your intention is to return during Pesach, then you're obligated to do bedika. Makes sense, right? Okay. What if it's your intention to return before Pesach? When would you do your bedika?
When you return.
When you come back.
So you might think, I'm leaving before Pesach, let me do my bedika when I return. So that's one opinion. But there are other opinions that say you should do your bedika before you leave.
Within 30 days.
And the reason is...
You're still within 30 days, right?
No. You're going away and you're coming back before Pesach.
But I mean, if you're going 31 days and you're coming back, you do bedika then.
This
is only within 30 days, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I think it even would even be 31 days. Because the reason that they hold is the following. Your intention is to come back before Pesach. But you may be delayed. And you may end up coming back Erev Pesach. And since you might end up coming back Erev Pesach, you're not going to have time to do the bedika. Therefore, you have to do the bedika before you leave.
Right.
So we are l'chatchila strict like those opinions that say if you're going away and planning on coming back just before Pesach, so then you should do the bedika before you leave. B'di'eved, you can do the bedika when you get back, like the other opinions.
So what constitutes going away? But I mean going away, like Shalom goes to Big Sandy.
If you're moving your family to Big Sandy.
No, but I mean just going, he's going tonight.
That's not called going away. No, that's not called going away.
Okay.
Right, that's not called going away. Okay, now before Pesach, there is something that we do. It's called Tainis Bechorim. It's the fast of the firstborn. The firstborn from the father or the mother should fast. And again, there's different types of firstborn. Firstborn of the mother, that's Pidyon HaBen, right? Firstborn of the father... That's the one for the nachalah, for the inheritance. There's different types of firstborn. So it doesn't make a difference whether you're firstborn from the mother, firstborn from the father. You have to fast because all firstborns were killed on the night of Pesach.
Male or female?
No, male. Only male. Firstborn from the father, firstborn from the mother. Those are the only ones. Now, even if you're a Kohen or a Levi firstborn, you still have to fast. And there is a custom that the father fasts for his children who are ketanim. So let's say the father wouldn't be a firstborn. He fasts for his children. If you have a child who is a firstborn and the child is not 13, as long as the child is 30 days or more old, but not yet 13, the father will fast for that child.
Firstborn son.
Firstborn son, right. Mm-hmm.
So is the baby considered firstborn if someone had a miscarriage before that baby or not?
Speak to me after about that. There's a lot of different halakhas associated. Okay. Now, Erev Pesach, eating matzah on Erev Pesach. From Alos HaShachar, which is the first light of the sky.
Are you going to get to burning this year?
Well, the burning you're going to do on Friday morning, but there's no problem. You just do it whenever you want to do it on Friday. It's not like a regular year because there's no prohibition. So there's nothing to talk about.
Okay, so there is. So you don't do it when at the time you normally would.
No,
just because of no clue or anything.
Right. You could burn. You could get rid of your comet. That's right. Anytime.
You can burn at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And you're covered suda in place of the fasting. Isn't there a suda if you have a suda?
Oh,
a seum.
Yeah, so we're going to have in shul over here. That's good. I'm glad you mentioned that. That the essential halacha is you have to fast. But if you don't want to fast, so if you attend a seum, which is a completion of a tractate, which we're going to have here in shul, so if you attend that seum, so then you can participate in the meal, in the celebratory meal of that tractate, and then you won't have to fast. Right? So any Bechorim who don't want to have to fast have to come to Shul on that morning. Otherwise, you're going to have to fast. Now, the fasting, by the way, is going to be on Thursday. Okay? So the Tainus Bechorim, I didn't make that clear, is not going to be on Friday. The fast is going to be Thursday all day, and then if you're fasting, then you're going to go into Bedikas Chometz at night, fasting. So if you don't want to be fasting, you have to come to Shul Thursday morning for the Siyum.
Do the Bedika before you daven Marav record?
Yep. We're going to daven in Mincha Marav here in Shul, and then we'll go do the Bedika at home.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now, it is forbidden on Erev Pesach, which is going to be Friday of this year. Shabbos is going to be Erev Pesach. So, starting Shabbos morning, it is forbidden to eat matzah from Alos HaShachar, from the first light of the day. You can't eat matzah. Now, what kind of matzah? Let me rephrase that. Is there a type of matzah that you can eat? And the answer is, any matzah that is cooked. Cooked means that you took it and you boiled it, you cooked it in water, in a liquid. That type of matzah you are allowed to eat all day. And so, like, if you wanted to eat matzah balls are cooked. I'm talking about those people who eat gebracht, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to eat matzah balls, you can eat those on Erev Pesach.
For jarred gefilte.
Huh?
Jarred gefilte fish. No, it's not boiled.
What's that fish?
It has matzo meal in it.
Oh, that for sure is good. Yeah. Right. But even just a plain matzo ball, right? That's a cooked thing. Right. That you can eat. Now, there's something called matza ashira, which is egg matza. We call it egg matza. Sometimes it's made with eggs. Sometimes it's made with fruit juice. The custom is we don't eat that on Pesach, according to the opinions that say that it becomes chametz much faster than regular matzah.
Really?
We don't eat matzah ashira.
But on that Shabbat, you're
allowed. Okay, on that Shabbos, you're allowed to eat it up until the time of when it's prohibited to eat chametz. So once the time when it's prohibited to eat chametz, you can't eat matzah ashira anymore.
Could it count as the time?
No. We're going to see on Shabbos morning, you're not going to use... No.
Why can't you eat egg matzah? Did you say?
It comes faster.
She asked why you cannot eat egg matzah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But you can eat egg matzah during Pesach.
No, you can't.
No. You can't.
The only people who are allowed to eat egg matzah during Pesach are people who are ill or people who are elderly that can't digest regular matzah, so then there's a leniency for them. But everybody else is not allowed to eat egg matzah during Pesach. Okay.
Those Sephardim, don't they eat egg matzah?
Yeah, there's...
No?
No?
I don't know.
Some Sephardic communities.
We were just introduced to this in America.
I don't know.
We don't have that vision.
Okay. Now, I'm going to get to the schedule for Erev Shabbos after. I just want to talk right now about Kitnius. Kitnius is something that resembles grains, chametz, but isn't chametz. And it's the Ashkenazic minhag to forbid eating kitnias. Sephardim eat them, Ashkenazim don't eat them. So examples of kitnias would be rice, corn, peas, mustard seed, and the entire bean family. What's the reason? Because chametz grains could be mixed in with kitnias grains, and you grind them up and you cook them and you make your dish, you could end up making real chametz. Okay, because they're similar in appearance. That's one reason. The other reason is because you might confuse kitnias flour with chametz flour. Okay, so for those two reasons, the Rama said it is the custom of Ashkenazic Jews not to eat kitnias. You're allowed to own kitnias. You don't have to sell it. We just don't eat it. So you're allowed to own kitnias. You may use it for non-food purposes. So you can serve kitnias to your pets, for instance. You can use it for heating, for burning, things like that. It's not forbidden to have benefit. We just don't eat it. You may own it. Now, as far as medications are concerned...
Wait, I'm going to talk about kitnias for a second. If you're a Sephardi, like me, and we invite somebody Ashkenazi...
They cannot eat kitnias.
But I do not cook any kitniot for that meal, although my pots have kitniot.
It's fine.
It's okay?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not Ben Yomo or anything like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's get complicated, as you may know. Let's say that an Ashkenazi person is going to a Sephardi Seder. There may be dishes that this person will say, these dishes do not have any kidneyot, but these do. Please feel free to eat.
It's complicated. So it's not something we can discuss during this year because it's complicated. And it's complicated. I'm not sure I would recommend it. Okay. Now, as far as medications are concerned... Let's talk about three categories of ill people. One category is chola sheyesh bo sakana, a person who is sick and his life is in danger. A person who is chola she'ein bo sakana, a person who is sick and his life is not in danger, but his health is impaired, he's not functioning normally. Those two categories of people can take any medication. Even, for instance, let's talk about chola sheyesh bo sakana, a person who's sick. A person who's sick and his life is in danger can take any medication, even if the medication has chometz, no problem. A chola sheyesh bo sakana, take any medication, you don't have to worry. A chola she'ein bo sakana, that means he's not functioning normally, but his life is not in danger. Any pill that you swallow, you can take, even if it has chametz in it. As long as it's a pill that you swallow. If it's chewable, or if it's a liquid, it can't have chametz.
Is this the third category?
Second category. Okay, the guy who's not in danger, but he's impaired, he's not functioning normally, he has to lie down in bed. So that person, if it's a chewable tablet, or it's a liquid... can't have chametz in it, because he's eating it now, he's not swallowing it. But it's okay if it has kitnias. It's okay if it has kitnias. Now, the person who has just a mechush bi'alma. Mechush bi'alma means, I have a headache. So I'm functioning normally, but I got a pain. So for that person, any pill you take, it can have kitnias. Preferably... the chewable tablets or the liquid should not have kitnias.
Preferably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find a medication without chametz, if you can find a medication, I'm not talking about specific medications now. So specific medications you have to check after the class. But if you can find a medication without chametz in it, a pill, let's say. It's preferable to take the pill, chametz. If you can find, if you're allowed to take pills, even if it has chametz, because you're not eating it.
Even a mechush bi'alma.
A mechush bi'alma. I don't remember. I have to check on that. But a person who's a chola she'ein bo sakana can take a pill. A person who's sick but is not in danger can take a pill even if it has chametz in it. And I don't remember if the person who just has an ailment, just a little pain, if they can take a chametz pill. I think yes, but I have to check on that. I don't remember. But when we say that you can take a chametz pill, a pill with chametz in it, and you're only swallowing it, you're not eating it, so that's not called achila, it's preferable if you can find another one that doesn't have chametz. But if you can't, don't hesitate, you can take it. Because anytime you swallow something without chewing it, that's not called eating. Okay? There's no prohibition. Now, kitnias, there are three categories of kitnias. The three categories of kitnias are kitnias, kitnias derivatives, things that came from the kitnias, and then there's kitnias shenishtanu, kitnias that were changed. Example, you can have kitnias like a corn, and then you can have corn oil. The corn oil came as a derivative of the kitnias. And then you can have corn syrup, which is kitnias shenishtanu. It was changed. It's a whole different chemical thing. It was changed from the kitnias. So the custom is that we are strict not to eat any of those categories. And you go to the Star K website, you go to the CRC website, you go to any of the kashrus organizations, you can see a full list of products, what are called kitnias and the derivatives of kitnias and kitnias shenishtanu that you can't eat.
Did you say corn oil is a derivative, category two?
Yeah.
So that's also Sfardim can't eat them, right?
Well, no, Sfardim do eat kitnias.
They have no problem with those shenishtanu and everything.
Yeah, they have no problem with real kitnias.
Okay, I thought there was some issue about benefiting from chametz. Is that not correct?
Yeah, you're not allowed to benefit from chametz.
So like if you're swallowing but not chewing, you're benefiting if it's chametz. What is that?
Yeah, but if you I hear your question, but if you need to take it for medicine, you're allowed to.
But you're not actually benefiting from the chometz itself. It just happens to have chometz in it, so you're not really deriving benefit from the chometz directly.
Right. Right.
You don't need the wheat.
Right. It's
the wheat is just
all there. The medicines. The almost a lot of the medicines there. That you have all chometz in it. So there's no question for people. Those people who need to take it, you're allowed to take
about
it.
The,
it's a good question.
Category.
Yeah.
Somebody takes medicine every day for their entire life. They, I don't know, they have mental illness or something. They have to take the medicine. And they can't find it in any other form. So
you take it.
Yeah.
You take it. You absolutely take
yeah.
it. Okay? Yeah. Now, the schedule for Erev Pesach, which is Shabbos. Again, if you have a specific issue with respect to medicine, these are sort of general guidelines, but if you have a specific issue, call me and, I can look up any specific medication and discuss the case, like what are the circumstances for taking it. Okay, davening on Shabbos morning. Okay, this is now Shabbos morning again. Davening is going to be 7 a.m. Okay?
Thanks, Rabbi.
Reason,
I appreciate
that. The reason...
Well, no, it makes sense because you need 2 meals before you can have...
Right, well the reason... The latest time for eating chametz is 10:49. That's the last time. Davening is going to take 2 hours. There's not going to be a speech. It's going to be real streamlined, but it's going to take 2 hours to finish davening on Shabbos morning. So if you start at 7 a.m., you finish at 9, got to give everybody time to walk home. So Travis, I used you as the example. I figured 1 hour to walk home. If you leave here at 9, walk home at 10, you still have time to eat your bread by 10:49. Okay? So 10:49 is the last time. The final bittul, the nullification, which is the second one in the Haggadah, you'll do before 12:07 on Shabbos morning. Yeah, I'm going to talk about how to do the Suda.
I'm going to talk about it. Bench twice because
I'm going to talk about that. Okay? I'm actually not so in favor of that. You'll see.
Okay.
Now, you'll do the bittul before 12:07. The last time for getting rid of your chametz is going to be 12:07. Now, how do you do Shabbos morning? So you get home from shul, And what you're going to do is you're going to prepare a Pesachtik meal. Your meal's going to be kosher le Pesach, with the exception of the challah that you're going to eat.
Friday night also.
Right. So with the exception of the challah that you're going to eat. So for hamotzi, you can't use matzah, erev Pesach. Can't use matzah ashira, because there are many people who say that you're not going to be able to make hamotzi on that.
What about matzah Friday night?
Yeah, because it's mezuzahs, right?
Regular matzah?
Yeah, but...
Kosher Pesach, but not Shmur matzah Friday
So technically
night,
speaking, you can.
But do you...
No, I don't.
I thought you were
okay, because from a while before.
No, the day before. That's all custom. A month before, that's a custom that some people have. The day before.
Matzah shir is the word for egg matzah, mm-hmm. or the juice or something.
Egg matzah. Rich matzah shir means rich matzah, means it has fruit juice, it has eggs in it.
So you cannot fry.
So you should not use egg matzah for
Friday
your hamotzi. Not Friday night, not Shabbos morning.
Because it's not really hamotzi.
According to many opinions, it's not. Okay? So therefore, for Friday night and for Shabbos morning, the best thing to do is to use bread. Fresh bread, the fresher the bread, the less it crumbles. Mm-hmm. Some people try to get pita, because pita makes less crumbs than other things. And that's totally fine. Two fresh pitas, that's good.
But kosher matzah Friday night would be okay, right?
It would be. But I wouldn't eat it.
Okay, because of that being that close?
Yeah. No, because I want the taste to be so special.
Well, but I mean, not shmurah.
Yeah, fine, whatever. That's fine, that's a personal preference, but technically speaking, it's okay.
But not Shabbos morning, though.
No, Shabbos morning not.
Even non-shmur.
Even non-shmur, just, yeah.
So, yeah.
What if should we still be strict with pastisrael? Like, if you know something doesn't make as much crumbs, like there's this flatbread, it's not pastisrael, but it doesn't make as much crumbs, you should still try to eat
No, we're, if you're strict on eating pastisrael on Shabbos, then you should eat pastisrael. You should
have those very soft, not
from. Let me just tell you, the more preservatives in the bread,
the softer
it is, and the less crumbs it makes.
But Natalie's has excellent, very soft challah, by the way.
Okay. Now, so what you do is like this: you're making a regular Pesachtik meal. However, you have to make hamotzi, and you're going to make hamotzi with a challah roll. So your tablecloth is kosher lePesach, and all of your kalim, all of your utensils are kosher lePesach. So what you're going to do is you're going to have a disposable plastic or paper tablecloth on your table. You're going to make kiddush, and the only thing will be on your table is just the tablecloth. You'll make kiddush, take off the kiddush, then you'll have the challah on the table, you'll make hamotzi, you'll finish eating your challah. I'm talking about Shabbos morning now, okay? It's the same thing, going to be the same thing for Friday night, but we're less frantic Friday night, okay? But so for Shabbos morning, you'll then eat all of the challah that you want to eat. You'll make sure that any crumbs that fall on the floor, you sweep up. Anything that's on you, you brush off, you sweep it up, put it back on the tablecloth, let's say, roll up the tablecloth, throw the crumbs and the leftover bread in the commode.
You might not.
And then you'll flush it down the toilet.
You might not want to use plastic for that, though.
No, you don't flush your tablecloth down the toilet.
Well, don't you want?
No. Just
you're saying put napkins on top of the table.
Just listen to me. Just one second. You put just the crumbs. So you take the tablecloth with the crumbs, and you put the crumbs in the toilet, and you flush the toilet. And then the tablecloth you can put in your garbage can. What we have over here, and almost universally it is accepted, lahalacha, first of all, your tablecloth is not chometz. It just had chometz on it. But even if there would be some chometz, you put it in before the zman of 1207 into our garbage cans, which are not owned by us. They're owned by the city.
Ours aren't, though.
Huh?
Ours aren't.
What do you mean yours aren't?
Our subdivision up there, we have our own garbage pans.
So that's
can I put my neighbor's garbage pail?
Can you what?
Can I put my neighbor's garbage pail?
You absolutely can.
I'll ask him ahead of time.
You absolutely can. You can put it in your neighbor's garbage pail. That's no problem. As a matter of fact, it is suggested in halacha to ask your non-Jewish neighbor if you can put your chametz in their garbage can. But if you own a city, if you have a city garbage can, it's not yours. You put it in there. It's the city's property. My garbage can is going to be sitting out by the street. or in the alley, and I'm going to be putting stuff in there constantly.
I have a problem to walk to my garbage can because it's in the outside. No hoop of them.
It's what?
No, so, just, no, isn't the whole inside of the Amli? No, it's not. No, because you didn't make an Eruv Chatzeros. So there's nothing you can do. So you just leave the
in that cabinet.
No, you see, the thing is like this. The tablecloth is not chametz. The tablecloth is not chametz. It's just what was on there. That you can flush down the toilet. And that's what you'll do.
Okay.
And then after Pesach, you'll get rid of that tablecloth. But it's not chametz. Just don't use it. Put it away. What you can do is you can put it in your cabinet that you're going to sell. Put it in there. Yeah.
Oratorables has said you can shake it out in the front of your house if you're in an eruv, can you do it six? It's less messy because it's higher to get all the crumbs in the toilet. Could you shake it out in front?
It's still on your property.
Yes, I was wondering about that.
Shake it out on the street.
Oh, I wondered about that. But said they may have said specifically front, but you're saying that's still your property. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But then
right.
Doing,
so
the humo, but then by doing that, you're feeding wild birds. You're not supposed to feed the birds.
Don't eat.
Well. No.
So that you're having your tablecloth, and then on top of that you could dispose of
it.
You're only going to have your bread, your bread.
It's sad. There's no plates.
No, and then once your bread is finished, you wrap it up, flush it down the toilet, throw out your tablecloth, and then you have a regular Pesach Dick meal.
Do you have to bench before 10:49?
Okay, so the thing is like this.
Can you make mufti on the outside porch and then come in and eat?
For what?
If you're going to have Pesach, you ate...
Just because for your kalim, if you're going to have... If you're going to use Pesach to kalim, so you might have some bread in your mouth, so you want to rinse your mouth.
Is it better to use paper and all that meal?
So it's a personal preference.
Personal. It's not because... You don't have to.
No. No. So now you continue with your regular Pesach to kalim. Now, let me just address the issue of Shalashudas. So there are some people who say that on Shabbos... Since we need to eat shalashudas, so you're supposed to eat bread for shalashudas. So how are we going to do it if you can't eat bread past 10:49? So some want to say that what you should do is have the first challah bench, leave the tablecloth alone, leave it as it is, go for a walk, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, come back, wash again, or maybe have some challah and some gefilte fish, and then bench, and then come back, and then wash again, and that will be shalashudas. Now, according to many, you should know, it doesn't work. And the reason why it doesn't work is because you can't wash for shalashudas until the time of mincha. According to many Mephorshim, you can't wash for shalashudas until the time of mincha.
Yeah.
Six and a half hours into the day, you can't wash for shalashudas. Okay, mincha gedola, right. So until 6.5 hours into the day, you can't wash for shalashudas, according to many opinions. And therefore, that doesn't work.
Okay.
So most people are not going to know how to do that, not going to be able to do it, it's not going to work out properly. I'm not going to suggest that you do that. I'm going to suggest you go home, you wash, you eat, get rid of your chametz, finish your Pesach Dik meal, and then... bench when you want to bench. Make sure you finish eating bread by 10:49. Make sure you do your bittul by 12:07 and discard any chametz by 12:07.
Would you not recommend?
One second. So then, shalashudas, sometime in the afternoon, after 6.5 hours into the day, right, which is the first time for mincha, sit down and have some fruit, because according to many opinions, that bidi evit after the fact satisfies for shalashudas.
Mm-hmm.
So sit down and have some fruit then, or something else for the sake of shalashudas. Yeah, something that was cooked, not baked. As long as it's not baked. If it's matzah that was baked, you can't have it the entire day. If it's something that was cooked in water, boiled.
You couldn't have.
You don't want to have matzah meal cookies that were just baked.
Right, I forgot that you made that.
Okay.
That wouldn't be a manot.
Right, an egg and a salad and a fruit. That will be your shalashudas after, and that's how you'll do it. So that's it.
Would you recommend doing the beetle immediately after finishing the challah?
Yes.
Just as a practicality.
Yeah, yes. I would recommend doing the beetle. I would recommend doing the beetle right after you finish your challah, because chances are you're going to forget if you don't do it right away then.